Game On 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the Straight Talking Savings Bank.
Hello, you're very welcome to Game On here on 2FM. It's Hugh Cal with you until 8 o'clock tonight and over the next hour. Well, of course, we're going to be looking back on what was a very special weekend of sport.
The ball dropping in towards Shane O'Donnell inside in that full forward line for Clare. He gets it up into his hand. He drops the line along the ground and it's gone all the way to the net. There were plenty of Kilkenny players there, but they all seem to be at sixes and sevens. And Shane O'Donnell gets his second goal of the match here.
We're out again next weekend. Am I disappointed? No, I'm not. We're against the wind, Shannon, so we always knew they were going to come back. So they went, just made a few mistakes to capitalise on it.
Well, I just don't need to accept it. I think the decision was right. I've let my teammates and the manager down today, and even more importantly, let all the supporters down, so I take full responsibility.
It's amazing. I mean, it was a great assist by Angel, and then I just tried to kick in the first touch, and lucky was goal, but the most important thing is how we played, how we showed the English football that we can perform at our best level in the best games.
Yeah, I thought in the first half we played very well, but in the second half we didn't play very well.
The Six Nations Women Championship winners for 2015 as Ireland!
We're under pressure to get some points, but I think we're just concentrating on performing well, and we knew that if we did that the points would come, and I think like the scoreline just reflected how well we did it, and I just think the girls, it was such a great team performance. I think everybody on the team, you know, one to 15, all the subs that came on performed really well, and I think that was the key to our success today.
And Wales have set a pretty high bar this afternoon with that victory over Italy. Ireland within 2 yards of the line. Conor Murray looks to gather that one towards Sean O'Brien. Sean O'Brien reaches out and Sean O'Brien has touchdown. It's a try for Ireland. 72 minutes gone as Murrayfield erupts. It's almost like a home game for Ireland.
That could be a huge score when this afternoon is over.
Right towards Mermoz. Thought about using Nakatasi, and there he is. Nakatasi over the halfway line. If he boxed himself, he might have the better of Brown. Nakatasi! Demonti! Oh my word, what a try for France! Well, that is incredible, Ralph.
That is unbelievable.
82,000 people on their feet. This is it for England. 10 seconds to go. The championship on the line. And they're almost at the French line. England, one last chance. France get the penalty. Ireland are champions.
No, no, no.
Ireland are Six Nations champions.
Well, first man in.
You would have to think that's it. What are they doing? All they have to do is kick it out.
What are they doing? What are they doing? Play continues. Just kick it out. England still alive, incredibly. Do they know? They do now. And now Ireland are definitely Six Nations champions for 2015.
I never would have predicted such a game in Twickenham. A fair play to England. They were absolutely incredible. And a fair play to France as well for scoring some amazing tries. So I've never received a trophy in such a bizarre situation. It's so strange. In some ways, it actually feels better than last year. So yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it certainly was great. Some incredible drama that took place over the last 3 days, particularly on Saturday. Alan Colley is with me in studio, as he is every Monday night. You know, just listening back to that now, amazing stuff. An amazing day for rugby. And look, I suppose by your own admission, you said to me there, you'd never seen anything quite like that in rugby.
I haven't really, Hugh, even in sport, because as you know, my background, obviously soccer, but and I wouldn't be mad into rugby, to be quite honest with you, because of the stop-start nature. But I spent 7 hours watching rugby on Saturday, and it was the best 7 hour sport I've seen in a long, long time.
You're still married after it.
It was just incredible there. And someone put up on Twitter afterwards that they should tell rugby teams that they have to win by 20 every match.
Yeah.
It was just, and surely is there an argument to have some sort of incentive to try and get the best out of them that way? Because the both teams attacking like that, there's no better spectacle. It was just incredible.
Well, that's it. I think it's something I'll mention to Conor and Donald later on. But I think, you know, as the lads were saying in the studio afterwards, it was a mindset that all teams went out with that day. Like, Wales knew they had to win by a certain amount. Ireland knew they had to beat Scotland by a certain amount subsequent to what happened in Wales, or in Rome, I should say. And then England had to win by 26. So when you, you know, when you have a focus of the mind like that and a target in front of you, you just have to go for it. And, you know, not all games are going to work out like that. You know, it just so happened. The amount of things that had to go right for all that to conspire for Ireland to win the match in the dramatic circumstances in which they did. And you think about Sarto's late try for Italy. You think about Hogg, you know, getting turned over by Jamie Heaslip and dropping the ball then. Mm. You know, all that kind of stuff. And then even Nagatasi putting the ball down just as he was about to step over the dead ball line as well. That was given. All these little things, and Ireland come out the better at the end of it. But, you know, if any one of those had gone against us, that was it.
Well, it just made for an incredible day. And for the tournament organisers as well, Hugh, to get a culmination like we got on Saturday, when everyone was criticising, everybody that I've seen, even Twitter, Facebook, whatever it might have been, criticising the staggered start. But it couldn't have worked out any better, because as you said, each team was going in with a mindset, we must do this, we must do this.
But I don't understand the criticism of the staggered start, because with that, you get to see all three games. Mm. I mean, with, say, RT and BBC having the rights over here, you'd only get to see maybe one or two matches. They might show England, France there, if there was all going on at the same time. And I think that the chips fall a certain way. And, you know, going into round one, who has the last match on the last day? It's very rare that you get a situation where it all comes down to the last match on the last day. So to give out about the staggered start, I think, is nonsensical.
Yeah, it is. And especially with them all still involved at that stage.
Exactly.
It doesn't really transpire like that. But it was just an incredible... It was, like, obviously for rugby, it's amazing. But just for sport in general, it was unreal. And then, obviously, for Ireland to come out on top of it as well made it all the more sweeter.
The men winning on Saturday, the women winning yesterday in emphatic circumstances. And again, you know, a couple of years ago, Ireland were champions and they won that Grand Slam. It was incredible to watch. But this was altogether different. This was kicking on to another level. Mm. And they just destroyed Scotland yesterday.
They did, and we followed the most of the season, obviously, down in Ashburn. And like that, Hugh, as you said, it was probably a surprise 2 years ago. But looking at the group now, and even speaking to some of the girls, there's an expectancy amongst them now. Yeah. And I think even that's come from, obviously, the men as well. You listen to Paul O'Connell and them all speaking. There's almost an expectancy now that...
It's a winning mentality, isn't it?
It is a winning mentality. Like, the moral victories are gone now for Ireland and for the like. So it was just an unbelievable day. And they just look like such a brilliant group of lads. Yeah. I have a lot of... As you say, I'm not the biggest rugby fan in the world, but I have such admiration for them. I love Johnny Sexton. But just them group, they just look like sound lads who you could go for a few pints with. And they go out and run through walls for you then on a Saturday. Like,
I'd say they did go for a few last night and the night before. We're going to talk football later on, of course, with Eamon Dunphy, as we do every Monday night. 51552, any questions for him? We've got Liverpool United to talk through. We've got El Clasico from last night, which you have to mention as well. And not a good day for Steven Gerrard yesterday at Anfield. We've Robbie Henshaw coming up, Niamh Briggs, Donal Lennon and Conor O'Shea, as well as Eamon. So keep your texts coming in, 51552 and at GameOn2FM on Twitter. But first, it was, as we said, an amazing final day in the Six Nations. One man who played a massive role in everything that had happened in that final match at Twickenham was referee Nigel Owens, who I'm delighted to say joins us on the line now. Nigel, I don't think we'll see anything quite like that for a long time. How did it feel to be the man in the middle of it all?
Oh, it's an amazing experience, isn't it? You know, a great weekend of rugby. I think from the first kickoff and until the final whistle, right at the end, where nobody knew or could imagine what was going to happen. I think, you know, from the first game, when, you know, I think here in Wales we were quite confident in Wales that, you know, we'd do well and would beat Italy with a few points, but I don't think anybody saw, you know, a 60 pointer come in. And then. And then I don't think anybody saw what would happen in Murrayfield, you know, with Ireland then playing so well and winning by that margin as well. And I don't think anybody imagined that England then would win by that margin and get that close. It was just a phenomenal day of rugby and just a total pleasure and privilege, really, to be part of, you know, such great three games, in all honesty.
I mean, for yourself as well, I was thinking when England scored early on, looking back on it now, and then France responded so quickly, you know, after everything that had already happened, as you said, in Rome and in Murrayfield as well, there was this kind of sense that perhaps something special was going to happen. Did you feel it at that stage, or were you just busy concentrating on the match?
No, I saw the Welsh game. I didn't really see the Scotland-Ireland game, and I really wasn't 100%. I was quite aware, like, you know, that England needed to win by, I couldn't remember if they said 26 points or 32 points or 28 or whatever it was. So I wasn't really quite 100% certain, to be honest. And when you're refereeing the game, you're just focused on the game itself, and that's what you do in any occasion, really. You just concentration, because I think that's the most difficult thing about refereeing Test match rugby, is is your concentration and your consistency and your work rate for that 80 minutes. And you're just concentrating on the work, and you're not sort of, you're not aware at all, really, of what goes on around you sometimes. You know, it's only now this morning I've sat down and gone through the game again as part of my review process of the game that I've sat down and realised, bloody hell, what a great game of rugby this was. You know, you had the sense it was a great game of rugby when you were there involved with it, but you didn't really know how good it was. And, you know, I just go out there and just referee the game and, you know, sort of was concentrating so much of the game that I really didn't know or really wasn't thinking, you know, what the score was or what it would mean at the end of the game, to be honest with you. And I think that's the best way to do it, to be honest.
Yeah, and I was thinking as well afterwards, I wonder whatever about the player stats on that day, I wonder what your stats were like in terms of the amount of ground you had to cover. I'd say you were kept pretty busy for most of it.
It was. I think probably, to me, three games that stand out, I think, in the last 18 months, 2 years that I've refereed, and that would be South Africa and New Zealand out in Ellis Park, where you were altitude as well. And then Ireland, New Zealand as well, another great game of rugby. And then this one. So I think I probably covered more ground. I'll know exactly when I download the GPS information in the next couple of days how much I did cover. But I would think that this one would probably be the most, I think, because the ball in play time in this game was 40 minutes and a half, which is up at the top end of the game. I did South Africa, Australia back in September, which is a great game of rugby, where the ball in play time was just 45 minutes, which is phenomenal. But then this was 40 minutes and a half, and also taking into account that you had 12 tries. And if you think about it, people think, well, the more tries that are scored, there must be more ball in play time. But it's not, because when you score a try, you've got 90 seconds to take the conversion, and most of the tries conversion will take up about a minute to a minute and a half. So if you think about it, you take 12 tries, over a minute for each try, so you can take about 15, 16 minutes out of the game because you've got so many tries. But I think because England were taking the conversions pretty quick in this game to get on with it and get the points, they weren't taking as long with the conversions, and that's why your ball in play time was so high, which means it's even higher when you take into account there were 12 tries as well.
Exactly. So, I mean, between you having to keep up with everything, to keep an eye on everything, the amount of tries, and adding to everything else that goes on during a normal rugby match, we really saw the value of your assistant referees and the television match official as well during that match.
Yeah, it's, like you can't referee international rugby anymore on your own, basically. You know, when you think of the boys that were doing it back in the 70s until the early 80s, I guess, and in club rugby as well, that professional end of game, when, you know, the neutral touch judges or assistant referees didn't come in the club game here in Wales. I think it was still probably the mid-80s, maybe even the late 80s, early 90s. So, you know, you can't referee the game on your own. There's so much goes on. You need assistant referees with you to do the job on running touch or dealing with foul play and seeing those little things that sometimes are impossible for you to see. And it's important, you know, you have a good team of officials with you. And, you know, I think you saw all through the weekend, you had great teams of officials who contributed to the three games, I think. You know, the credit has to go to the players. You know, they're the ones that make the game, you know, and it shows that when you've got teams that want to go out there and play rugby, then there is no better team sport in the world. And also as well, the fact on the weekend that they all had to play rugby because they needed the points and they needed the tries. So they had to go out and play. And then, you know, it makes your job as a team and officials, as a referee, then, you know, a little bit easier. And you can just let the players play then. And that's what happened on the weekend. So, you know, the credit on the weekend must go to the coaches, I think, and to all the players involved in the game. And also from my point of view, you know, to work with the other officials as well, which is great in that team effort of, you know, of getting the big decisions right. Is that's what we're there for.
And we were just thinking as well, if you could somehow bottle what happened on Saturday, it was a lot of things had to happen in order for us to get those kind of games, and maybe we won't see that again for a long time. But we were thinking, even just as you mentioned there, for the coaches and the players to go out and approach matches with that kind of mindset, to wanting to play rugby, wanting to run the ball and score tries as many as possible. If we could repeat that more often, rugby union, I think, would be a lot more popular.
It certainly would, you know, and you know, I think it's pretty much impossible to repeat those games and those occasions very often. And I And I think in one sense, that may not be a bad thing in one sense, because if you have, you imagine you're having that drama nearly every weekend, then you know, by the end of the year, everybody's going to get fed up and used to it. And because these dramas happen from time to time, they make them even more special. So, you know, yes, we'd all love to have, you know, quite a few more games during the season where they're up there as some of the best games that have been played. Yes, but, you know, it's virtually impossible to get that. And because these games and these occasions happen from time to time, they make them even more special again. And, you know, on the weekend was one of those special moments, really, which, God, will we see a Saturday like this? We would like to think we'd have it next year or the year after, but we may not see this for a while again.
You mentioned the players, Nigel. In terms of Chris Robshaw and Thierry Douze-Étouard, you know, generally, it's something we talk about on the programme quite a lot, the attitude of rugby players towards referees versus soccer players towards referees. And I was watching the Clásico last night between Barcelona and Real Madrid, similarly Liverpool, Manchester United, and I was just thinking, you know, they are miles apart, they're worlds apart, the attitude of those players versus what you would have to face dealing with rugby players. Is that fair to say?
Yes, it is. There's no doubt about that. You know, I think, you know, rugby is the type of sport where you can't continue with the physical game of rugby. You know how hard it is out there if you don't have the mutual respect for players, each other on the field, the teams, the fans as well, sitting, you know, mixed in the stadiums as well. That respect has to be there, and the respect for officials as well. And, you know, rugby has that core value, and it's important that rugby maintains that, you know. And, you know, we've seen the odd occasion over the, and I don't think rugby can take the moral high ground here on soccer, because, you know, there are things in rugby that we need to do better and get better. And, you know, we've seen the odd occasion over the last sort of 18 months where we've seen a few players trying to buy a penalty or take a dive and stuff. But I think what rugby does, and all credit to all the governing bodies of rugby and World Rugby as well as a governing body, is what they do. They, when these incidents do come along, you know, they deal with it firmly and fairly, and, you know, we stamp it out, and that's one of the important things, because, you know, we can't lose respect for each other. I think society today is lacking one important thing, is respect, you know, and I think that is the same goes to sport as well, and I think that's one issue that the soccer needs to address, I think, is that, you know, the respect that the players have for each other on the field, and the respect that they show the officials as well, is not acceptable, really, because, you know, football more than any other sport in the world has a bigger influence on society and everyday life and young children's lives and looking up to the heroes than any other sport in the world, and it has a duty sort of to show that respect at the top end of the game for everybody concerned. And rugby, we can't take the moral high ground, because, as I said, we got things that we need to improve on as well. But certainly the respect in rugby is there, and it needs to sort of be maintained and kept as an integral part of our game. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, well said. I think everyone will agree with that. Nigel, just, you know, from our own point of view, I wanted to say that, you know, a game like Saturday was allowed to happen because the man in the middle allowed everything to flow as well as he did. It was a fantastic performance from yourself. I know you're not in it for the praise, but I think that just needs to be mentioned. And thanks so much for making the time to talk to us. We really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks very much, and thanks for your kind words as well. Thank you.
Okay, Nigel Owens there. Donal Lennon and Conor O'Shea are with me now. Just to continue maybe on something that Nigel Owens said. And Donal, if I can start with you, because, you know, Nigel said, he mentioned about not wanting to bottle what we had on Saturday because it's so rare and therefore so special. And maybe that's it. You know, these days happen very few and far between, and that's why we can celebrate them.
Yeah, I think he's right. And I mean, I can't ever remember a day like it. And I'm following the Five Nations or Six Nations for a long time. I think nobody could have, in their wildest dreams, could have figured out that Saturday, that we would have got what we got in the end. And when you think about it, it could have been all over reasonably early had Wales not fumbled, gone over the line with a couple of minutes to go, and Sarta scoring at the other end. There would have been a 14-point turnaround. I think that meant Ireland would be chasing 35 points. So, as I say, that would have been an incredibly difficult target to chase. So it could have been over before it started. But, you know, I was lucky enough to be in Edinburgh. The atmosphere during the Ireland game itself was just unbelievable. But I think what added more to the occasion was the fact that you had 5,000 Irish supporters who they were only allowed back into the stadium at half time in the English game. Now, obviously, a lot of them were following the match in the bars outside.
Yeah.
and we could hear all the shouting and roaring all of a sudden. And, you know, we went out of the press room and the stands were full, and the cheering for the French with tricolours everywhere was incredible. So I think it all added to the atmosphere and certainly made the presentation of the trophy in the end even more special for the Irish players.
Conor, I mean, this came up between yourself and Georgia and Brent after the match that, you know, perhaps we could, the game could try and look at something to encourage teams to play as Wales did and as Ireland did and as France and England did on a more regular basis. But maybe, you know, as you said, it's just down to the mindset of the coaches and the players on that particular day.
That's the biggest thing, Hugh, that I'd be looking at. It's not the fact that, as Donal said, it could have been all over at the Welsh game and it would have been almost a damp squib. But each team reacted, but they reacted because the shackles were unleashed. They had to go for it. And that doesn't mean that still the defining moment of the day could have been Jamie Heaslip's tackle and Stuart Hogg. I mean, it was a tackle that actually ended up being the difference. So it's not saying that, but I think the lesson, and maybe it's not just at international level, do you have to play differently when you play England for the way they defend? Yes, you do. And Ireland did that. But actually, for so many teams around, let's look at the positive, and this is a coaching thing. Mm. It's a refereeing thing. Let's look at positive mindset, because that's what the game was invented. The game was invented for people to run. Does that mean a brilliant kicking game is important? Does that mean a great dominant scrum isn't important? I mean, do France have a bad scrum, but did Vincent Debatty happen to get on the end of one of the all-time great tries? So it's the mindset of people to play. That doesn't mean we'll always have that sort of day or sort of games, but wow, I mean, you want to go along. I judge it on the reaction I'm having from people. And I don't know what Donal is like. I brought my little girl swimming yesterday, and these people were coming up to me, A, talking about Ireland, but B, saying, and these are people who just, you don't even think, watch rugby. Mm. They were just enthralled because they saw something that they could identify with and go, wow. Whereas at times, we still need to be the purest. We still need to have a maul. We still need to have a scrum. We still need to have a mindset to take people on. And the more we can encourage that, and that's a coaching, not just players, it's coaching, it's media, it's refereeing. Because I almost fell in love with the game again watching the rugby. It was so special. Topped off by a special end, and Ireland winning. But I just thought it was incredible, and the more we have of that, the better. We'll never have a day like it again. I don't think we ever will. But it was special.
It was special, Donal. And part of what Conor mentions there, I mean, when you strip rugby down to its most simplest form, it's a game about running with the ball. France did it, England did it, Ireland did it, and Wales did it, and that was the end result.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of factors like that coming together, as you say. All sides were very positive in their attitude. That made a difference. I think the weather conditions were fantastic. That was a contributory factor as well. But the most important one was the mindset of the players, as Conor has said. And I think it's hugely important in the context of the World Cup. I think Ireland needed to almost prove to themselves that they could deliver, they could offload under pressure, they could score tries when they had to, because there was a definite element of conservatism there for the past 6 months. And we knew that this, that's not the way Joe Schmidt wants to play. We recognised that when we saw the approach that Leinster had under him for 3 years.
Yeah.
But I think that there's a lot of elements have to come together to get games like we had last weekend. And it was the perfect storm. Everything happened. But the most important of all was the mindset of the players in terms of they knew they had to score tries. And obviously, when you get, my understanding was when, you know, when Ireland went out for the warm-up, they were told Wales were leading by a point. That was half-time. By the time they finished their warm-up, Joe Schmidt called them in and he just said, lads, you're going to have to win by 21 points.
Yeah.
And I think there was kind of one or two looks and, you know, the players wondering what had happened in the meantime. But by virtue of the fact, that statement alone meant that Ireland knew they had to just go for broke. Likewise, could you imagine what it was like for Stuart Lancaster saying to his England players, lads, you're going to have to win by 26 points.
Yeah.
And against France, you know, no matter how bad France are trying
to
beat
the best defensive side in the tournament.
Yeah, but trying to beat, you know, trying to beat them by a margin of 26 points, you would have thought was impossible. And England almost pulled it off.
Yeah.
I mean, they must be kicking themselves. And obviously a lot of the players, Conor would know them extremely well from Harlequins. But where Ireland, I think, got it right, they had the mix. They knew they had to score, but they kept their discipline and organisation and defence. England got sucked into the whole thing because of the pressure on them to score the 26, but they forgot about their defensive structures.
Mm.
And that cost them in the end. I mean, the bottom line is, OK, they scored 7 tries, but France scored 5.
Yeah.
But look, that all added to the drama. And as I say, we were in Murrayfield when England got that last line out. And then the French started running from inside their in-goal area.
Yeah.
People were going ballistic.
Yeah.
It wasn't as if France were 6 points behind and, you know, they had a chance of winning the game. So you wonder what Ouje, what he was thinking of. He certainly
wasn't thinking of Ireland.
He
anyway.
Wasn't thinking of his pal Trevor Brennan down in Toulouse anyway. So I don't know.
Conor, just on something that Donal said, and we don't have a huge amount of more time, but you know, from Joe Schmidt's point of view, if you're looking at Joe Schmidt now, and in the context of the World Cup, as Donal mentioned, that game against Scotland has shown that, you know, perhaps there is a lot more to come from Joe Schmidt and his plan for Ireland, and that maybe, you know, he has been holding something back and not wanting to give away all his hand, if you like, ahead of what is the biggest tournament in the world.
I think you're under pressure, and Donal knows from his time that you're always under pressure, and sometimes you have to have your hand forced, and sometimes, you know, it's a cliche to say you can learn from defeat, but I go back to one of Joe's first matches in charge, and they said it happened at Leinster as well, and Paul O'Connell saying after, I forget exactly which one, but it's come to my mind as we've spoken, that they concentrated on so much of the detail, they forgot about what really counted, and that rugby is a game of passion and physicality and work rate, as well as the detail. And exactly the same, fast forward to when you're playing and you're maybe slightly constrained in the way you're playing, the defeat in Wales could be the best thing that's ever happened to this group of players, because it's actually seen what they're like in adversity. It's given them something to work on and say, hey, that we can't just have one way to skin a cat here. We have to play in different ways. And that is not to say you can go out and just play with abandon every time, because there are teams, if you play against England, there's no point running the ball against them if they're in the mode they usually are. Because they have a suffocating defence, they leave space. Well, that's where their weakness is. Exploit it until they drop back, and then you can go. But it's actually shown this group of players, as Joe has always had, there is a multitude of different ways we can play. And would I want to get into a 7-a-side match against Fiji, Samoa, New Zealand? No, probably not. Probably want to play it in a slightly different way. When you play France, do you want to get tempo into the game? Because let's be frank, they're not fit enough.
Yeah,
they can play, they've got unbelievable runners, but they're just not fit enough, and that's a sad indictment in itself. So you have to be aligned. I think that's one of his great strengths. He has an ability, and now the group have shown each other we have an ability to play different ways, and it can be just as exciting watching the way they took England apart tactically and technically by dominating aerially, because that was an area strength, as it is as exciting to watch it was the last day. But I loved the last day, and you'll, it's one of those days that I think has reignited all our passion about rugby, and at the end of it, we got the ultimate result, which was Ireland winning the championship, which was, you know, topped everything off. I'm getting a bit of abuse in a training today, saying that don't know if everyone's seen that YouTube clip of the father, the Irish father. They all think that was me in the studio. So I'm getting a bit of a bad time from some of the England players today, but they knew they were part of something pretty special. They're pretty down, but great day.
We'll have to leave it there, lads. Unfortunately, just out of time, Conor O'Shea and Donal Lenihan. Just a couple of texts on 51552. Listen to Nigel telling English captain Christopher, and seeing him walk away head down with sheer class shows respect for the referee. That was a brilliant moment.
Yeah, I said it to you when we come in here. When we
Christopher.
And Rob Shaw walked away like a little schoolboy.
Chris, who are you talking to? My name is Chris.
It was absolutely brilliant, but it just goes to show the respect. Nigel Owens is brilliant, and it was really nice words there, Hugh, what you said to him, because although the game was absolutely brilliant and the sport and everything, he refereed it in such a brilliant way too, and that shouldn't be forgotten. And I think the soccer could learn a lot from the rugby referees.
Absolutely. There's a story today, you might have seen it, that he was subjected to a couple of vile
tweets, Nigel Owens, after the match from English fans. And I'm not going to go into it now. He didn't want to talk about it, obviously, but let's just say we hope they get everything that's coming their way. Even lads, is it just me, but I don't think Sexton is at all 100% fit. He looks tired. He missed three kicks that he normally would have got, says Declan. I think Declan, yeah, I mean, he got that hamstring problem. He had to come off midway through the championship. He was 3 months out before he played his first game in the second round. He missed the Italian game, if you don't remember, with concussion. So, you know, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how much Racing rely on him over the next while.
It's one of them, Hugh. I think the first game, when he gave that man of the match, basically he put on an exhibition the first game that he came back. He was probably running on adrenaline through that. But then after you play two or three games, it eventually catches up on you, the length of time that he was out. But he's been brilliant, considering he was out the length of time and he's come back. Fair enough, he didn't have his best game against Wales, but what a player. Sexton's unbelievable. I love Sexton.
Yeah, he's brilliant. Not everybody's happy. Folks, get real. We got three tries from bashing away at the line. The All Blacks won't cough these up in the same way as Wales didn't. So one real creative try. That's the reality, says Bill in Tramore. Another one says, lads, you're completely misinterpreting Saturday's events. In each game, one side had nothing to play for. Italy and Scots died at halftime, and England allowed France to remain in touch as they tried to play sevens. I don't think so, to be honest with you. And the point about Scotland, I mean, Scotland were desperate for one victory under Vern Carter, because if you talk to the players, they really appreciate everything he's trying to do for them, and they seem to respect him and want him to stay in the job. And they were trying to beat Ireland, but they just weren't good enough. And one more, which, yeah, I'll read it out because, you know, we're a democracy here. Ireland are not good enough to win the World Cup. We can't put a sequence of wins together without one poor performance, and when that happens in the World Cup, we will end up playing the All Blacks in the quarterfinal. End of story. Also, and this is interesting, women's rugby is not a sport. One unconverted try in a home game and 70 points in an away game. Enough said. Rubbish, really, isn't it?
He needs to cheer up.
Cheer up.
If it's a he.
Thanks for your text, though. 51552. And we'll be back with Eamon Dunphy after these.
Get your game face on.
Game on 2FM.
Okay, you're very welcome back. Alan is with me in studio and Eamon Dunphy is on the line. Hi, Eamon.
Hi, you.
Listen, we have a text in from Frank in Cork, and you can take your time thinking about this one. He says, I'm looking forward to Eamon's weekly obituary on Manchester United's future and how Liverpool deserve a Champions League spot. Liverpool had their chance yesterday. They weren't good enough. No question, United deserve that Champions League place.
Well, yeah, it's a good question, but it's based on two results by United. One against a Tottenham team that I think everyone agrees were dire on the day. Mm-hmm. And yesterday, I thought experience was what United had and what Liverpool lacked. I think he played Sterling in the wrong position, should have played him more centrally. But I don't think the two games prove anything. We'll see how United do. It's a huge result for them yesterday and a very bad result for Liverpool. But United have to play, I think, Chelsea. They've got to play Arsenal soon. You know, later on, rather, and Chelsea soon. So we'll see over the long stretch. And the obituary I was writing would be for the Van Gaal project. And I don't think I was alone. I think I just noted yesterday, Graham Souness had a very strong fancy for Liverpool, Jamie Carragher, Liam
so
Brady,
did I.
John Johnson. Yeah, well, so did I. Because I think we've seen Liverpool go on a long... The last time they lost was at Old Trafford when they lost 3-0. So they've been on a long run. But one thing... And that can be a bit misleading in the Premier League because there are so many ordinary teams in it. The one thing Liverpool have always had difficulty with... is breaking down teams at Anfield, even ordinary teams like West Brom, Sunderland, whoever. And again, that was apparent yesterday. And then, of course, there's the Steven Gerrard sending off. Maybe if they'd had 11 men on the pitch, they would. But if the texter believes that sending a rampaging Fellaini all over the world in a red shirt is going to strike terror into the hearts, or I think United have an awful long way to go. And one other question begs to be asked: where was Juan Mata all season?
Yeah,
and he was the difference. Although, well, he wasn't just the difference. I think United from the get-go dominated Liverpool, and I think that was a well-worked strategy. Why wasn't Wayne Rooney playing up front all season? A sign of bad judgment by the coach. Where was Juan Mata Why did he pay 60 million for Di Maria and leave him on the bench? There's an awful lot of questions still need to be asked about Manchester United, despite the fact that they've got 6 points in the last two games. That's my defence.
Yeah, I mean, all those points were made. And Alan, I think for a lot of people, Liverpool were so disappointing yesterday. And after that recent good form, there was a lot of strong belief that they would take United yesterday. They just couldn't match them.
Yeah, I would have fancied, like Eamon, I would have fancied Liverpool yesterday as well. Probably even more so, Hugh, had it been a couple of weeks ago. But then United had the game, obviously, against Spurs, where they did play very well, albeit against the poor Spurs team on the day. But I still thought Liverpool at home would have enough to beat them. But in fairness to United, I thought they played very well in the first half. And exactly as you said, they'd done... United done to them what Liverpool do to most teams, I feel, in Anfield, in that they were out of the blocks quick, they were hounding them straight from the get-go, because we even seen last season Liverpool blowing teams away after 15-20 minutes and teams can't live with them the start they make. And in fairness to United, they done that to Liverpool yesterday and they found it really hard to get out, to pressurise them high up the pitch. And the onus then was on Liverpool to try and, obviously after United had gone in front, to try and break them down, but there was too much momentum in United's game at that stage and they were controlling the whole game. Obviously the Gerrard sending off is a big help as well, and you're playing against 10. And I thought United played very well, and I'm like Eamon, I'd be still a bit kind of, it's still questionable, Hugh. Two games, you can't judge anything on two games. Up to two games ago, everybody in the world was questioning United and Louis van Gaal. So fair enough, they've had two good games. Let's see, can they go on a run of five or six, and then maybe we'll judge them and see if they are the team that everyone wants them to be.
And two games doesn't make a Champions League place. Eamon, in terms of Steven Gerrard, I have to say I felt a bit sorry for him yesterday. There was somebody was very quick up on Twitter. They put a heat map of Gerrard's performance, which was literally him running onto the pitch and running straight back off it again.
I saw that, yeah. No, I think it's sad because it's his last match against Manchester United. And it was uncharacteristic. One thing Gerrard never has been is a dirty player. So I think it probably, if you look at who he's been sent off against, it's a couple of times against Everton, a couple of times against Manchester United. I think it was an unfortunate incident. But the way the game's going now, you know, there's an awful lot of stamping. If you look at Skrtel's stamping on De Gea,
yeah,
really nasty. And he's been charged by the FA for it.
Yeah.
But that sort of stuff is commonplace, you know. But I felt sorry for Gerrard.
Did you watch Barcelona Real Madrid last night?
I did. It was a disappointing game. A lot of tension, I felt, on both sides. It was a huge game for Barca. They're 4 points clear now. They don't have to play Real again. So who's going to beat them is probably the question. And I think Madrid didn't. Madrid are... You know, you can see one paper in Spain today refused to give Gareth Bale a mark of any description for his performance out of 10. So there's serious trouble in the camp between Gareth Bale, Ronaldo, and even though Modric came back and improved the side, Ramos did a little bit, Real Madrid have massive internal problems that I think will have implications for their Champions League defence as well.
Their fans, Alan, this morning, some fans waited up to the small hours of this morning when the team flew back to their training ground and had to drive from the training ground home. Gareth Bale driving out on the ground and three or four fans waiting to kick and punch his car as he drove off. I just thought, that's crazy. That's madness. Like, these people are lunatics.
Yeah, they are lunatics. And we think by looking at English football, the fans over there are mad. And they are obviously passionate. But see, over in the continent, lunatics is not the word. I seen an incident in Galatasaray over the weekend where a player wanted to substitute himself.
Fenerbahce, was it?
Because of the abuse he was getting from the fans.
Yeah.
Maniacs.
From his own fans.
Yeah, and Bale, you can't, like, I feel sorry for Bale, the stick he's getting. I think Bale is an unbelievable player, Hugh. But when you go into an environment like that with a 100 million price tag on your head, like, it must be so, the pressure that must be on him every week. And in fairness to him, he delivered last year. He was unbelievable. He scored, you could say, the winning goal in the Champions League final. He got the second one with the header. Then remember the unbelievable goal he scored in the Spanish Cup final, ran off the pitch. So he delivered more than anyone could have expected last year. He's going through a rough patch, yes, but it doesn't help him when the so-called greatest player in the world, Ronaldo, is throwing a strop like he did last week because Bale scores. This is when they need to rally around him and try and help the young fella.
It seems, Eamon, that Cristiano Ronaldo, for all his skill and strength and brilliance on the pitch, has the mind of a child because he cannot accommodate anybody with a higher price tag on his head in the same team. And that, to me, is so immature. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, it is unbelievable in a 30-year-old guy. I thought he'd lost a lot of that stuff, but it's still in his character, clearly. And the effect he'd have in dividing the dressing room. I don't think he gets on with Casillas or Ramos too well either. So I think he's a very disruptive figure. I would say, Alan, that your xenophobic remark about continentals, I don't know if you've been to a match in England recently and heard the stuff that goes on in Manchester United Liverpool games. It's filthy. Yeah. And, I mean, they talk about people in the most disgusting way. But in Gareth Bale's case, I think coming from the relative sanity of an English dressing room rather than a stadium, he would have been, and with the 100 million price tag, I think he would be absolutely baffled by what's going on in that dressing room. I've read a book about Mourinho, which maybe you guys have, you know, what went on during his time there. It's very, very difficult. I mean, it looks like Ancelotti's going to get sacked, and he's just won the league last year and the Champions League. So it's a crazy place. I don't think Gareth Bale would appreciate it, let's put it that way.
Okay, listen, we'll leave it there, Eamon. Thanks many for your time, as always.
My pleasure.
Yeah. Eamon Dunphy there. One quick text on this. John says, lads, you sound so disappointed United won. It's hilarious. You can't take it. John, what are you, 5 years of age? You can't take it. Sickener. I couldn't give a monkey's where the United win or lose, to be quite honest. And Alan Cawley is a United fan. So what planet are you on, John?
Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the straight talking savings bank.
Okay, I'm delighted to say we have Robbie Henshaw on the programme now. And Robbie, thanks so much for being with us, first of all. Your first Six Nations campaign proper, I suppose. And you have a winner's medal to show for it. How does that feel?
Feels unbelievable, yeah. It's just hitting me now, really. Just thinking back with kind of the way we went about winning it as well, you know. And having to watch the end of that English game was pretty torturous, but it was unbelievable feeling after that, and from the back end of hard work and really good group of guys and the management and the staff. Just everyone was on the same page all the time, and it was just really, really a close group and a great bunch of guys.
I can't imagine what it was like having to watch that England-France game, to be honest with you, because I was in Twickenham with Ralph Keyes doing it for RT television, and we nearly lost our lives at the end. We were trying to commentate on it. So I can't imagine for you guys as players waiting to see whether you're going to be champions or not, what it was like.
Yeah, it was our heart rates were nearly as high as they were in the game. You know, it wasn't easy to watch it at all. And I think it was a quick tap in the 80th minute, I think someone quick tapped and went. And we almost lost our lives then, and then they eventually kicked it out, and that's when we were jumping around the room and celebrating, hugging, and getting ready to go out onto the pitch. Then it was just incredible the way it happened. And probably, I don't know we mightn't see that for a long time again.
I don't think we will. Nigel Owens on earlier, and he said the same thing. You probably won't see that for a long, long time. And look, I was just thinking there, I mean, there have been so many players for Ireland over the last 20 years or so, like really brilliant players over the years, that never got there to winning that championship medal. And to do it, you know, in what really is your first year in the Ireland camp, that must be just pretty special.
Yeah, no, it is. It is pretty special. As I said, I was there last year for the celebrations and for the experience over in France, and I was 24th man and doing the extras and stuff. But definitely it's an unbelievable feeling. And I know I mentioned to the captain last night, that's my first trophy I've won in professional sports. So it's a nice one to as a first one as well, you know. So to have a medal, it's pretty incredible. And it's just hit me now, and really, really grateful for the opportunity I was given, and just want to keep looking to improve now, and hopefully we're not looking too far ahead of ourselves, but it's back to our province now and back to the back end of the season, and then taking steps towards the World Cup. So it's going to be an interesting few months ahead.
Yeah, and all that to come as well, which is just makes it the possibility of this year, you know, gets even better, I suppose, if you think about all of that. But, you know, even talking to, say, a few guys from different countries that mightn't have come across you before in an international context, they can't believe watching you play that you're 21 years of age. It seems like, Robbie, you have no fear of anyone or anything on that pitch. Where does that come from?
I think it's a bit of comes down to your mental attitude as well. I think it's your head. It's all in your head as well. If I think you prepare yourself mentally, you won't. I don't think you'll back down from anything, and you can pass that. You can pass anything. You know, I think as well. It's a bit in the heart as well. You know, so you wear your heart in your sleeve. I think, and I always go about that, just giving 100% on the pitch and doing what I can for the team to make the other guys look good. So I think just giving all you can for the benefit of the team. I think that's what I always look to do, and always look to give the lads a dig out. And I suppose I don't mind the physical contact, the physical side of the game as well. And I do enjoy a big hit, all right. So I suppose that's probably I like the physicality of it. But I think, as I said, it's mentally, and mental side of it is a big aspect of it. And obviously then in the heart it's a big one as well.
I mean, looking back, you made your senior cup debut in transition year, if I'm right, so maybe you were 15 or 16 going up against guys that were 2 or 3 years older than you even at that stage. But 2 or 3 years when you're 15 or 16 is actually a massive physical difference, so maybe this is something that you're actually quite used to and quite good at.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I always played played a kind of a bigger guys and played on a kind of an older side when I was about 15, 16, and I was introduced to senior cup and ended third year, yeah, in TY. So I was kind of always playing against bigger guys and kind of just learned to deal with it and never really had any fear about it. So I think that's just how it's been for a while. And development wise, I grew a lot when I was over the space of 2 years from transition year to fifth year. I think I got a bit of a growth spurt there, and I hit the gym a good bit in that transition year, and kind of just tried to bulk myself up a little bit, but not too much. Like,
what's Jared Payne like to play alongside?
He's a really good player to play alongside. Really intelligent guy. Knows the game incredibly well. Like, and just really helpful to have outside you. He's just always chatting, always in your ear, you know, and his communication is brilliant on the pitch. And I think he showed off his attacking threats there on the weekend.
Yeah.
He had a really good second half. I thought he took his try unbelievably well, took a lovely line for it. And I think, down the right touchline, he put some space for himself and Tommy Bowe down the right wing. I think it just only showed glimpses of what he's capable of doing, and I think there's way more to come from him.
In terms of your own highlights looking back, and maybe it's a little bit too soon to kind of reflect properly on it, but you know, what stands out for you? Is it that try against England? Is it, you know, doing what you had to do against Scotland in terms of points? Was it the France game? What stands out for you? Maybe the try against England, looking back, is that pretty special for you?
Yeah, I think the try against England would probably be one of the standouts. I think it was a big moment for me and my family, and obviously to get your first try on your home soil and against England is a pretty big occasion. I think that was one of the standout moments. I think, yeah, coming into this week was massive, and I think during the week, Paulie took the bull by the horns, and he really kind of got ourselves together and just got us pumped for the game, and I said, listen, this result first, and then we'll see how the scoreline is going. And eventually we broke them down, and we built up that score to as much as we could. So I think, yeah, it was a really good game as well. It was enjoyable to play, and there was a bit more space for us, and it was a relatively open game. So I think definitely the points, getting the points difference, and the afters of watching the game afterwards was incredibly intense. That was definitely a highlight as well. But I think the atmosphere in Murrayfield was unbelievable afterwards when we got the trophy and the presentations. I think for them to allow the crowd back in to watch the English game was something special, and there was just an unbelievable atmosphere there. So I'd like to thank all the supporters and everyone who came along. It was incredible.
Listen,
you made it really special.
Yeah, sorry. Just finally, I suppose, you've got Connacht against Munster this weekend. You got the game against Gloucester coming up as well in the Challenge Cup. So it's no time really to sit back and enjoy this. You've got to get straight back in and can try and continue what has been a brilliant season for Connacht.
Absolutely, yeah. We're still focused on that, retaining that sixth position in the league, and that's started back again with Munster this weekend. It's going to be a big test for us down in Thomond Park, but I think it's going to be a tough one. But and then we've Gloucester the following week away, so two big weeks ahead, and it's just back to business again, and you know, so just looking forward to getting back to the other environment now, and out of camp mode and back into provincial mode.
Brilliant. Look, Robbie, everything over the last while has been fantastic to watch from Ireland and from your own point of view. Thanks so much for coming on. Appreciate it.
Thanks a million. Cheers. Take care.
Robbie Henshaw there. Okay, we're just out of time. My thanks to JJ and to Adrian and Robbie who produced. A couple of texts we didn't get to, which we will try to tomorrow. Thanks for your contributions over the last hour, and thanks to you, Alan.
Pleasure, Hugh. Enjoyed
it. We'll talk to you on Wednesday, as always.
Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the straight-talking savings bank.